My name's Robert Cornidge. I've been with the Payment Association since before it existed, so at its little inception, when it was just a twinkle in Tony's eye. So what we're trying to do here is trying to create a bit of an interesting session on the future of currency, or the currency of the future, whichever way rich round you want to talk to it. I've got two great guys in front of me. One I've known forever, and another one I've known recently, but he is wearing the blue shamrock of Ripple. So three cheers for Ripple going up 25% today. Yay. Or not Ripple, sorry, XRP. So we've got Ripple, and we've got Julian Sayer from Zodiac without the ick, or the ack.
You can't say that.
Zodia. the trouble is on this sign, it's saying X this, X that, but... He is X all these things, but what he is now is Zodia, which is great, because the last time I had him on stage, he was Gemini, which was one of the signs of the Zodiac. and we had a great session, actually. I did ask him the question, how many other signs of the Zodiac are there? And you answered?
12.
And that kind of killed the question, to be honest. Anyway, what they're going to talk about today is the currency of the future, where we're going and what's happening. And they've both got great experience in this area. We've had a lot of interesting sessions with lots of people on stage, but this is just a bit of fun between three of us chatting and chewing over the cud about the future of currencies. Do you both want to say who you are a little bit, or have I given you an introduction? Julian?
Julian Sawyer. I'm CEO of Zodia Custody, which is a crypto custodian. Prior to that, I was at Bitstamp, Gemini, as Robert said, and a co-founder of Starling Bank. So this is the first payments conference I've done in about 5 years because I've been in the world of crypto. So it's good to be back, put it that way.
Yeah, hi everyone. I'm Kirit Bhatia. I have the enormous pleasure of running business development for Ripple across Europe, Middle East, Africa, and the Asia Pacific. Been with Ripple for 4 years. Prior to that, a traditional banker for 15 years, JP Morgan and RBS.
Thank you. First question to the audience. How many of you have got crypto wallets? Put your hand up if you've got a crypto wallet. So, okay. How many of those, put your hand down if it's a custodial crypto wallet and it's... good question. No, people have lost it. We lost the plot on that one. How many of you hold Bitcoin? Okay, so a few smiling faces because it was doing very well still. Nearly hit $29,000. So, all those currencies, how are they going to take some impact on what this currency of the future might look like? We've got XRP, we've got BTC, we've got Ethereum. How are they going to have an effect on what this currency of the future might look like?
Is that a me, Robert?
Sorry, it is you. Sorry. I was looking at you thinking you might answer, but, you know, it's a guess.
Yeah. So, you know, trying to predict the future is a hazardous activity, right, by any stretch of the imagination. But I think maybe if we take a look back a little bit, that can inform, you know, how digital assets and digital currencies can potentially shape the future. So in the rearview mirror, when you look at what we mean by currencies as mediums of exchanges and how we use them as a means of transaction, you know, it changes all the time. Whether it was bartering, then it was gold, then it was paper money, then we moved to electronics. And so it's a fluid process, and it changes. It changes as new technology comes online, as we evolve as a society and economics develop. So here we are today. We have a piece of technology that will allow you to send value from A to B anywhere in the world instantaneously in real time, right? It's cheap, it's fast, it's crazy transparent. So you can go to any decentralized ledgers, Block Explorer, and you can see all the transactions that are going on at that point in time, right? And so the question is, how does that inform the future, right? And I think the way it helps us point to where this could lead to is, firstly, I think it opens up our aperture of what we consider to be a really effective method of transaction, right? And a medium of exchange beyond what we know today. The other point is, and I think this is the most powerful component of digital assets is, you know, we send emails, messages, photos, video files instantaneously today to anybody in the world without thinking about it, right? And here we have a piece of technology that could replicate that same experience and that same functionality, but for value, for money, right? And then transact it. So I think that, to me, that is what cryptocurrencies, you know, help us think about and how do we drive forward.
And Julian, so we've got these email equivalents. We used to do posts, it took 3 days. We used to do money by backs and chaps, it took 3 days. We now have email, we now have cryptocurrencies. What are the other sort of benefits that we might get out of it? And specifically looking at programmability, which I think is a big question here. As we move down the line to maybe stable coins being used as a means of transfer of value and CBDCs coming in, how can that programmability also give us an additional added value in this new market of money?
I think one of the things we've got to think about is, what is a cryptocurrency? And I'll be fairly brief because I know some of you have already been in sessions today, but you've got Bitcoin, which is an investable asset, goes up, goes down, fine. You've got utility tokens, you've got stable coins, you've got CDBCs, and you've got NFTs, and we can probably add two or three others in that category. I think one of the problems we've got is we constantly talk about crypto as being all the same. It is not. They are fundamentally different use cases that are applicable in the marketplace. In terms of payments, you wouldn't want to get paid your salary in Bitcoin. You wouldn't pay your mortgage in Bitcoin. But stablecoin has a fundamental use case, which is superb. And as we were just talking about, in terms of doing it super fast, but also really, really quickly. And when you look at the generational jump that you can do, so if you have Swift GPI or something, it's still going to take you several days to get money to the US, money to Australia. You've got corresponding banking, you've got risk within that. All of a sudden, you can do that instantly at fractions of a cent. The problem we've got in payments is, what do we do with the first mile and what do we do with the last mile? So how do we disperse money? We can get money into a country. How do we get it into the ATM network? How do we get it into cash? How do we get into people's bank accounts? And that's the bit that we still need to work on. But in terms of being able to transfer value, stable coins have a huge amount of opportunity. So if you think about cross-border remittance, so people sending money home, something like up to 25% of the money they're sending home is taken as fees. That is so morally wrong, okay? Because these are the poorest people trying to help their families, and the payments industry is taking so much. If you look at supply chain finance, it is a broken process. It costs a lot of money. So there's some real use cases. What we've got to do is stop talking about crypto or stable coins. Think about what the use cases are within the payments that's going to solve real world problems and issues for consumers or for businesses. Underlying, I think, all payments going forward, this is going to be a bold statement, there will be blockchain and there will be stable coins, there will be crypto, there will be digital assets coming through. So for me, we should be not talking about crypto, we should be talking about the use cases of how we can change the world of payments.
And that's a nice segue into moving from general cryptocurrencies and the like across to a CBDC. How, Gerrit, do you think that something like a CBDC could be that currency of the future? How's that going to be better than what we've got today?
Yeah, so we at Ripple are really fortunate to have, I feel, a unique vantage point when it comes to CBDC. So our CBDC team is probably the fastest growing team in the company right now. So we're engaged with multiple central banks around the world and helping them think through what that CBDC journey looks like. The two we talk about openly is Palau and Bhutan, two small jurisdictions. And this is what we observe from all those engagements. You know, number one, CBDCs are highly motivated by the ability, by the need to solve the unbanked problem, right? The unbanked, unreachable problem. They're also motivated to kind of fix the problems of the legacy analog infrastructure. You know, Julian's talked about how expensive that can be. And lastly, but not least, not obvious, they want to think about the environmental impact of issuing notes and coins and running legacy of impact. So that's sort of observationally, you know, what's driving central banks to think about it. Interestingly, this week at the BIS summit, you know, they, for the first time, they started talking about CBDCs in the cross-border, as a cross-border mechanism. We're not seeing that at the moment. Central banks are very, very heavily focused on the domestic use cases at the moment, right? But it is easy to extrapolate that once we get past that domestic use case, solve a lot of the issues that we have on domestic rails, we can jump to thinking about how CBDCs participate in the cross-border use case. I mean, coming back to Julian's point, you know, we have built a cross-border network on a decentralized ledger. From a standing start 3 years ago, we processed 10 billion last year, on track to double that this year. The greatest point of friction for us to settle transactions cross-border in minutes comes on the fiat ends, when you on-ramp and you off-ramp. And I call that when new tech meets old tech, the old tech is really painful to deal with. That's when speed suddenly drops and costs rise, and you know, you encounter all these pain points. Now, if we had ultimately CBDTs streamlining those two endpoints, we can actually potentially enter into, you know, whether you're moving £1 or £1 million, potentially, you know, we can streamline that end-to-end process for cross-border payments. But for now, heavily domestic. Cross-borders to come, I think.
I think that's exactly the point. I think Julian was talking about the on-rail and off-rail, and you talking about it there. There is no on-rail, off-rail when everyone's using CBDCs and stablecoins as means of transferring value, because you never, it stays as a token. It never has to go into what we call, what you call fiat, but it will be fiat in reality by that stage.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I may, and by no means trying to be controversial here, you know, but we used to go to the ATM quite a lot to get money out as paper and then spend it, right? Many of us just don't go to the ATM at all. And so fiat off-ramping into legacy systems is, in my mind, analogous to that, right? We're constantly having to fiat off-ramp from blockchains to settle transactions into localized systems. Well, if those systems move to the blockchains, you remove the need to go fiat off-ramp, and suddenly the whole system becomes super efficient.
And I think that's what's going to happen over time, because obviously the two systems have to run in parallel for quite a while, but hopefully what will happen over time is more and more transactions will just stay on the blockchain, which removes the on-off-ramp requirement. Do you see that, Julian?
Yes. I think we've got to be very careful. There are a lot of crypto people who are evangelists, and they will sit there and go, we're building crypto because we want to kill the banks. Visa, MasterCard don't have to work, you know, payments are rubbish, etc. That's not my position. My position is I'm a believer in the technology, but not as an evangelist at all cost. So crypto is moving rapidly towards banking. Banking is moving slightly towards crypto, but the movement is the crypto side, and that comes down to regulation, which I think we'll cover at some point. What is super important is you've got to look at the use case. Obviously, Visa and MasterCard are all over this conference today. Why do we like them? Because of universal acceptance. I can go on holiday anywhere, and I know I can take my card, I can use an ATM, I can buy, and everything else. Until you have got that universal acceptance, you have got local, regional payment schemes that could exclude people and exclude parts of the population, which will be wrong again. And I think we've got to be super careful on that. And I think, you know, people talk about whether Amazon are going to do a payment scheme or Apple does a payment scheme. Okay, there are reasons why some of them don't. It is a very, very hard to do. And so what we've got to find is how we dovetail the traditional acceptance, which works for all of us, it works really, really well, with the crypto and the blockchain technologies that helps us move money, store money, but also be able to use it.
And as we move forward into this world, obviously we've had the regulators on the chair in the previous session. I mean, trying to squeeze it into something like an electronic money or payment regulation is not necessarily the solution. It may be part of it, But obviously, the key difference with e-money is only redeemed, it can be redeemed anywhere, whereas a stablecoin goes into circulation and it's never redeemed except against the issuer when it comes out the other side. So in some ways, it's like an ever reusable gift card in a multiverse of acceptance of end users. How do you think regulate? I mean, I was talking to someone earlier today, and they were saying, well, the Swiss regulation is very interesting because effectively they just look at what it's used for. They don't look at what the actual token is. If you're using a Bitcoin to pay your mortgage, that's a currency as far as they're concerned. If you're using it as an investment tool to stake, then that's a security. The way that Europe's looked at it is very much more intrinsically in the token itself. Have you got any views on how regulation could work? Little question.
So regulation, I think you've got the AML rules and AML5 that is absolutely critical, and therefore sanctions and KYT, KYC and everything else. That is not clear and it's not enforced across the 24/7 global market of crypto. I think what you've also got is, and I know you probably have to be super careful, but the SEC is looking at certain tokens and seeing if they are securities. If that decision goes in one way, it will transform the industry. If it goes the other way, it will transform the industry, one positively and one incredibly negatively. But we shouldn't underestimate the power of this conversation around whether it's a security. In the US, it's unclear who is the regulator for crypto. SEC, CFTC, New York DFS, Fed, etc. All of the above or none of the above. In the UK, we've got a HMT consultation on crypto. If we take a step back, I think the two things that I think the big ask is can we have a level playing field and can we have alignment? So the alignment piece is that we don't have one jurisdiction, the UK or EU or US or Singapore, running at a fundamentally definition of what a stablecoin is or what a crypto asset is or what a security is, and ensure that they have the same general alignment in terms of how to onboard, etc. Because as a custodian, we get assets from all kinds of exchanges around the world because our clients are buying and selling assets. We need to make sure that things like the travel rule is implemented and is consistent. So the first one is alignment across jurisdictions. We are not there yet. The EU is probably one of the more advanced. And then secondly, we need to make sure there's a level playing field that when you have got the regulation, that it's actually enforced. And I just have to beat a little drum here. If you think of FTX, there was nothing to do with crypto or blockchain with the FTX failure. It was non-enforcement of existing regulations. And you can look at what Silvergate and Signature Banks went down. Again, nothing to do with crypto. It's nice clickbait for the journalists, but it isn't them. We've got to get over those moments. So for me, it's about ensuring that we have the right regulation. Now, just on stablecoin, then I'll shut up. On stablecoin, the big challenge here is trust. The pound, we trust because we're the Bank of England sitting behind it, the dollar, the Fed, etc. If we don't have trust in the stablecoin, that a dollar in USDT or USDC is not sitting in a bank, we have a fundamental problem with this being a medium of exchange. So regulation is incredibly complicated in this. Regulation always follows innovation, it should do, but we need to make sure that they are racing to the same alignment level playing field to enable us to use this as a technology and for everybody to address what's happening.
Kira, you got a few views on this?
Yeah, no, I mean, super, super complicated topic, and one you could, you know, at least there was a whole panel on it, but some thoughts from our side. 100% regulatory clarity is fundamental, is one of the foundational pieces of allowing innovation to flourish. I think everybody can agree on that. Ripple follows that. I'll come back to that. We put regulators in three broad buckets. So we have regulators that are super accommodative, they'll engage, they'll create sandboxes. If you look at Japan, Australia, Singapore, Korea, big, they're engaging right now, UK itself, Europe, big parts of the world, deep engagement, trying to allow, you know, innovation to flow. Then you have regulators in countries which just say, not now, come back in 10 years or come back in 2 years. China, India, you could put them in those buckets. And then you have like super complicated regulators, US being the one, where you actually don't know what you're supposed to be doing, right? And if you do something, you might get in trouble, you don't know, and they think they've got regulatory. And so that's a high profile fight we're in. So I think that's a observation level on regulation. Second point is, I think we will never get globally aligned standards, right? I think that's we don't have that today in today's world. I don't think we'll have it in crypto as well. But maybe a thought for regulators, and this might be a super dumb thing to say, is in the way that crypto technology stack completely simplifies a cross-border payment, maybe it's an opportunity for regulators to look at it and say, I'll start with a blank piece of paper and write a new set of regulations versus trying to fit existing regulations, overlay that into something that just may not be appropriate. But as I said, I'm not a regulator.
I think it's just a very, very difficult position at the moment. I think we've got some more consultations in the UK. We've got MiCA going on in Europe at the moment. We are, as a trade association, working with other trade associations under this Forum for Digital Currencies that we've set up, looking to create a lexicography to try and get some sort of continuity. I see I've got my colleague Kai in the audience there, who pointed out there are 6 different definitions of crypto asset in the different consultations and regulations in the UK today, and that was on a call we had earlier this week.
I mean, dare I say, I think regulators have a vested interest, where we see them to attract these businesses into their jurisdiction. So I think there's a bit of tension between regulators on what they do and how they.
But I think it's partly our job as the industry and our job as an association of you guys as our members to try to work with the regulators to create the best solution to avoid unintended consequences, which is always an issue, as we know. We have got some of the best legislative draftsmen in the world in HM Treasury here, who are sorely missed, I think, in Europe now. We do some great drafting over here, and I'm hoping that we can create a situation where we can make that fertile field for crypto businesses to settle in the UK as a place of choice to come. Unfortunately, we've only got 2 minutes left, so I'll let you both sum up in your own words. In a couple of words, you got 1 minute each. Currency of the future. Is it going to be Ripple? Is that XRP?
Currency of the future. So look, I think currencies of the future, I'll go back to that. I think we have we can open our aperture much wider to how we think about currencies of the future, what we use as mediums of transaction. I think for sure, blockchains and digital assets have opened up this huge opportunity for us to substantially reduce costs, open up transparency, and the speed at which we can move value from A to B. It's what we do every day with emails and messages and photos and videos. There's no reason why we can't do that with money.
Julian?
I think the currency of the future is blockchain-based. And I think all payments will be blockchain in some way, shape or form. And I think that is probably right. I think we've got to stop talking about Bitcoin. I think we've got to talk about the different types of crypto assets and the use cases, which we've covered today already. And then I think the opportunity is to create solutions for people and not talk about the underlying protocols, standards, etc. And we're in a room of payment geeks. We know what happens under the covers with faster payments or MasterCard or CHAPS or RTGS, etc. That's great. Our friends hopefully don't need to know that. Our family don't need to know that. Joe, public in the street doesn't need to know that. We need to solve their problems. It'll be underpinned by blockchain and crypto and digital assets.
So in the future, we'll all have our lovely digital asset wallets on our bank accounts effectively, in our pockets, in our phones, and somehow it will all work beautifully under the scene, and everyone here can just spend without thinking about it. Thank you both very much for a very entertaining and enjoyable fireside chat. If we could put our hands together for our lovely team.
Thank you, Robert.
victims, as we like to call them. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
To access more podcasts, videos and articles, go to thepaymentsassociation.org.